Radio Company. And welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at... Waiting for the cue. I'm just wondering if my mic is on. Cue check for mic check.
We can hear you, Miss Emily. Go ahead and,
okay,
and do your intro.
Thank you so much. All right, well, here we go. And welcome once again, for real, to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. Brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company and Forestville, California, Lucky Mojo Curio Company and oh, my Lord, have mercy, in California. Oh my God. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm just really having a hard time.
Do you want someone else to take over the announcing duties?
No. I'm having a hard time. It's not, the cue came up and I.
Okay, we're live on the air now, sweetheart. We're live on the air.
I just couldn't hear it. Okay. Okay, great. You guys, thanks. And,
okay, I'm going to have to take over, I think, because we're live on the air. This is the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. And it's all right if something's going on bad down there. Maybe we can get Papa Newt come on in and do us some guest announcing. How about that, Papa Newt? Is that okay with you? Guess not. All right.
Miss Cat, it's fine. It's all good. I just really lost my... I really sincerely... I just couldn't figure out what the mic... You know what, you guys? This show is brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. And also brought to you by Condiment Ali at condimentali.com in Mission Viejo, California. And this week we'll be joined by Madame Pamita of madamepamita.com. And she will be discussing Black Hawk today. And she is coming to us from Los Angeles, California. And we're going to go ahead and turn this over to our lovely Miss Cat.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm so sorry. I don't know what went wrong there, but it's live radio, as Professor Porterfield says. And when we have live...
The charm of live radio.
Yes, the charm of live radio. So this is Kat, and I'm here smelling like cinnamon. So that's my story. As I was running up here to get ready for the show, I was decanting a 1 pound bottle of cinnamon oil, and I decanted quite a bit of it on my right thigh.
No.
It happens. Boy, and I thought, well, I'm going to come up here and change my dress. But when I got here, I washed my hands and everything, and I'm smelling it, you know, and I smell darn good.
It is a fine smell. It is. It can be irritating, though, can it, on the skin, or did you get it?
Oh, it's warm, but not it's warm, but not horribly warm, just nice and I smell like Red Hots. So that's the news from here.
From cinnamon brooms to cinnamon legs.
Right. Well, cinnamon brooms, it's been a cinnamony week. Yesterday,
yeah.
Nagashiva and I were at the wedding of Gray and Marcus, our good friends. And those of you who follow Lucky Mojo Publishing know that the covers of most of our books, and first all of our books of late, and most of the books we've published, have been the artistic work of Gray. And he works for the Sacred Well down in Oakland with Rabbit as the shop owner down there. And they were getting married. They got married in Alameda in a beautiful, beautiful old mansion, a 19th century mansion built in 1895. And it was a wonderful party. There were people from all different interlocking communities. We were all in costumes. We were all having a great time. And the wedding was just so beautiful and so sentimental. They've been together 19 years. And the laws having changed, they decided to go into marriage, which they really loved the idea of. And it was just so many people there to be so happy for them. And Rabbit did the ceremony, and Nagashiva and I supplied the broom for them to jump over. And at the request of Gray, it was a cinnamon broom. So, it's a cinnamony time. And it was just lovely to have them jump over the cinnamon broom and have its little wafting scent. And the owner of the beautiful house where this took place had a Portuguese water dog, which was kind of sentimental to me, missing my old Sophie and Eris, our two Portuguese water dogs that we've had. We left that home and we met a Puli in the street. And a Puli is, some people call it a Hungarian water dog, and they're related. And so it was like a little old home week in Alameda. And it was kind of nice. Lots of cinnamon and pumpkin spice. And says Conjure Man Ollie. And we do wish them, Gray and Marcus, the most wonderful, wonderful marriage. They've already been married in heart. But, you know, there's something about being married under law where you really declare yourself to the world.
Right.
I'm always so happy.
And you
to
get
see
the
that.
Recognition from society.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
All of that.
Yeah, it was very great. Well, that's what's been new here. I tell you, I am so overwhelmingly cinnamon flavored. I can't even begin to tell. I can barely breathe. Ah, I feel like red hots. anyway, how are things down in your neck of the woods, Ollie?
Hot and sticky. You know, I posted in the chat that it's supposed to be a cinnamon and pumpkin spice time, but the weather disagrees with it. We're still having summer weather, and it's past mid-October at this point in time. And it's in the 80s, and the other day it was in the 90s, all week. And I'm teaching a room of 90 students or so, 80 to 90, depending on how many drop out.
Wow.
And so it gets very – and I dress warm, as Kat's well aware. And anyone who's seen me in person, I wear blazers and cardigans and sweaters and button-up shirts. It's very professorial, and I'm not enjoying it. It's so hot, and the AC takes a little bit to kick in with that many people in the room. So I got so fed up last week that I decided to do some weather working. So now we've spent the past few days under a beautiful gray layer with mist and a little bit of drizzle, and it's cooling things off for a few days. But I dread to think what happens when the weather decides to go back to its summer heat for the rest of October. So I am trying to keep busy doing what I do, as I usually am doing, while trying to avoid the heat as much as I can, employing both magical means and mundane means of cranking up the AC.
Well, we had a little bit of drizzle on the way down to the wedding, and we ran through a little patch, and that was it. But, you know, it brought to mind an old folk belief that I first ran into in southern Italy, in Calabria, on the eastern side of Calabria. There was a village of, they had been Albanian immigrants, probably in the Middle Ages. And it was known as this Albanian village, although they were not modern Albanians by any means. And this was back in the 1950s. And my mother, always an adventuress and wanting to find, you know, new exotica, mm-hmm. said, "We're going to the village where they speak Albanian in Calabria." And we went there, and they had special weaving that they did. And when we got there, and there was a wedding going on, and there were horses and carriages and things. Now, people had cars, but they were doing it with horses and carriages. And it began to rain, and everyone brought out their black umbrellas. And this is in the days before folding umbrellas. These were the big, long umbrellas. And they all brought out their umbrellas, and we were starting to get rained on. And I said something like, "Gee, too bad it rained on their parade." And my mother was talking with a man. She spoke Italian, and he corrected her. And he said, he asked what I had said, and she said, and then he said, "Oh, no, no. It's always good luck when it rains on a wedding procession."
Oh,
and that's now you have to wonder why. Well, the reason is the rain brings fertility. And it was a male and female wedding of a young couple, and they wanted to have the sprinkles on them. And we had to go buy umbrellas. We bought our own umbrellas, and no one would loan us one. I mean, it was a small village. And we ended up with these umbrellas, which we then had to lug around for a while. We finally left them at a pension somewhere else in Calabria because, like, it wasn't raining anymore. But yeah, so I thought of that as we went through the rain on the way to the wedding. But when we got down there, it was sunny. And I don't think any babies are in there in immediate future. Anyway. The idea that the rain is a sprinkling of, I guess you might say, heavenly semen, I think was the intention, you know, behind that.
I will never look at rain the same way again.
Well, you know, fertilizing, and you know, it's and it was interesting because in that procession, the bride and the groom had no umbrellas and they were waving and everything and getting little raindrops on them. Yeah, I hope they had kids. It was a long time ago.
And I hope
we have more rain.
Nagashiva
in his happy ways says, blessing of the goddess. I don't think so. I kind of think it was more semen-like than goddess drips, but that's just me. You know, maybe as a female, I'm always looking at drips coming down. You know, just make sure they land in the right spot. Let's bring Madame Pamita in.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing?
Hello,
I love when we talk dirty right at the beginning of our meeting here on the show.
Yeah. That's right. Well, you know, it wouldn't be the Lucky Mojo show without something about either botany or zoology. So that was our zoology message.
And dash of sassy over there.
All right. Well, it's so nice to have you here. And I just have to say that I believe that some of the cinnamon spillage that happened was on your account because we have a wholesale order of yours we're working on.
Uh-oh. So, well,
we
I said in the message board that cat ironwood wood is red hot. You're red hot.
That's right. That's right. Well, we have four boxes. We have four boxes of products on the floor we're working on for you. So, and I know you know what it's like because you've been here at the apprenticeship in the past and saw it all happen. So, and we're gearing up for that next apprenticeship. That's going to be on November 2nd.
And I can't go. I'm so sad.
Well, you'll make the next one.
Yep, I'll make the next one for sure.
They come around. But it'll be November 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. And we're going to be doing making more things. But I loved having you at that apprenticeship. It was so great. All right. Well, let's go into our topic for the day. And our topic, as always, is brought to us by our guest. So we're focusing on Black Hawk today. And now that's an interesting topic for sure. Has recently been a subject of some great popularity. Used to be rather obscure. Black Hawk was a Native American. He was never a chief, although some people like to call him one, but he never was. He was basically a war leader, a military planner and strategist. He led the Indian tribe that he was associated with, the Sauk or Fox Indians, in raiding parties against other local tribes. And when the colonists, you know, the colonial powers came in, he, you know, formed an alliance with the British. And then when the Americans fought against the British, he didn't like that as much. He liked the British more. They had been kinder and better to him. He also had relationships with the French. He was a political strategist. Well, in the end, he fought a war against the Americans, and he lost. And he's the only person in the history of America to have had a war named after him, the Black Hawk War. And there's a place that he looked out over the land. There was a kind of a cliff on the side of a river, and it was sometimes called Black Hawk's Watchtower, Black Hawk's Wall, because it's cliff, Black Hawk's Tower. There's been a building built there since, but it was just basically a place where they could do looking out over the land. And Black Hawk became associated with the idea of being a watcher on the wall. He was up there. He could spy out over the land and see what was going on. Now, in the course of events, the veneration of Black Hawk was introduced into the Black by which I mean African American spiritualist churches, by a woman named Leafy Anderson, and she was from Wisconsin, which is where Black Hawk had lived out some of his days, and she traveled around and she seeded different little spiritualist churches all around the country. People associate her with New Orleans. That just happened to be where she was when she died. She actually started churches in New York, Philadelphia, many places. And she was a preacher, and she taught the veneration of Black Hawk in the spiritualist churches. Okay, having said all of that, fast forward. Very few people outside the Black spiritualist churches even knew about Black Hawk. And until in the 1970s, a guy named Jason Berry, who lived in New Orleans, and he was a reporter, probably still is a reporter for the Times-Picayune newspaper of New Orleans, and he happens to also be the guy who broke the Catholic pederast priest scandal, and is much more celebrated for that. But he wrote various articles for the Picayune, and just, you know, he's just a guy, and he was writing about the Mardi Gras Indians, which are African Americans who costume up as Indians during the Mardi Gras festival, and they. They dress as Indians, and there's a whole lot of, they do little battle poses and things like that. And he kind of ran into a group of people who were venerating Black Hawk in churches, and these were Black spiritualist churches. And he kind of put the two things together. This guy named Michael P. Smith, who was a photographer, he's written a book called Spirit World of his photographs of spiritualist churches in New Orleans. And they got together and put together this book called The Spirit of Black Hawk. And it's a very interesting book. And, of course, Jason Berry set the scene. He told all about Black Hawk. He told all about the spiritualist churches. And that book kind of just languished on the shelves. I mean, nobody, you know, came out in the 70s. And nobody really much thought about it. I mean, it was one of those little specialty things that some people were interested in. And then the Internet happened. And, I guess I want to say that I probably was the first person who went on and said, look, this book is really interesting. And y'all should look at that. And suddenly, everybody was declaring that they had known all about Black Hawk all forever and ever, and they were, you know, writing books about Black Hawk and this and that and the other. But the upshot of it was that Black Hawk became quite popular with white people and people of part Native American descent and with black people. Now, I'm just going to slip in my little introduction to Black Hawk because I knew about Black Hawk, but not by that name. I grew up in Berkeley and Oakland, and Oakland had a tremendous number of black churches, including spiritualist churches, whose members had come from Louisiana and East Texas. And I've mentioned this before. There was a very strong Zydeco culture, Cajun culture, and others. People had come out to work in the shipyards in World War II, and they brought up people who worked in the Gulf of Mexico who had shipyard experience. They were building what they call Liberty ships and merchant marine ships to replace the bombed out Navy fleet at Pearl Harbor. And so those folks who came up to Oakland brought all of that culture with them, including the veneration of Black Hawk. And the first time I saw Black Hawk was in the back of a conjure candle shop in Oakland. It was a statue of an Indian. I didn't ask the Indian's name. I look back on that and I think, well, you know, I asked a lot of questions, but that was not one I asked. But the guy who had that shop would always talk about doing things the Injun way and doing things the Southern way, the Injun way and the Southern way. And he claimed to be part Cherokee Indian, which I'm sure now, in retrospect, he was. But at the time, it seemed to me a very odd claim for a black man to make. I didn't understand the whole history. I was just a teenager. But he had this statue. And it was a very conventional plaster statue, the kind you'd buy in Route 66 in one of those tourist shops in Arizona. You know, now they're made in China out of cold cast resin, but they used to be made out of plaster. And people could buy these plaster molds and make these things and paint them, and they'd sell them at these little tourist shops all up and down Route 66. I recognized it as such, and I thought, what's he doing with that? Well, so he told me, and it was in a bucket. It was in a bucket that was a farm bucket, and it had dirt in it. And he said, well, that's for all of the ancestors that were lost on the Trail of Tears. And I'm like, what? It was so over my head. I didn't go there. I just was like, oh, okay, Trail of Tears, right. That's the Cherokees. And he told me how you could take, if you didn't know where your Native American ancestors were, you could take dirt from any graveyard, but not from any one grave. And he called it general graveyard dirt. And you'd put that in the bucket, and he said you'd pray over it for your ancestors to come into it, the lost ancestors, and you water it with your tears, he said. And after that, you could water it with holy water from a church if you wanted to. And you watered it for 1 year, but never let it get mud, he said. Just water it a little bit, just sprinkle it. And at the end of 1 year, he said, that dirt would have called in your ancestors, and it was good as dirt from an ancestor's grave who had died on the Trail of Tears. And that was the story he told me. But he never used the word Blackhawk. He just had this statue of an Indian. Well, now looking back, I know he came out of New Orleans, and he came out of Louisiana, and all that black spiritualist church stuff. And there was a lot going on that was, like I said, over my head. So that's what I know about Black Hawk. Now, I know it's a long introduction, but I wanted to get this clear that Black Hawk was and is obviously venerated in black spiritualist churches, but the transfer of Black Hawk to the general, I guess you would call it, occultist community, the witch community, the pagan community, all of that has happened since the year 2000, approximately, maybe 1995. It was not apparent that you would not find that in the pagan community. But Black Hawk has become a very powerful spirit for those who wish to work with native spirits. All right, having said that, I'm going to turn this over to Pamita. Tell us what you want to bring us about Black Hawk.
Well, I think I love hearing, first of all, your story of, you know, making the man making the bucket and learning about that. That's amazing. I love that story. You know, I think it's useful to have the history when you're working with a spirit of understanding the history of where, how that spirit lived and what their life was like so that you can understand how, you know, how they're going to work with you or how, where their wheelhouse is, let's say. And, you know, when you look at the life of Black Hawk, he's an amazing, amazing man and things that he did and accomplished with all this, you know, everything stacked against him are just profound and amazing. One of the things that, you know, I think when we look at his life, first of all, we have primary resource information because he wrote an autobiography and had it published, translated and then published in the 1830s, I think, and it was the first Native American autobiography published in the States. It was the first voice, I mean, beyond his, like, accomplishments as a warrior, this is, like, the first time that the voice of the Native American population was being understood by the infringing culture. And when you look at that primary source material, you see a strong energy in him that he works to defend and protect people when the system has failed them. And so, you know, you were talking about how he's really come to the forefront again, like he was coming to the forefront in, you know, that early, the late 1800s, early part of the 20th century with Leakey, you know, as she was doing her work. But he's coming to the forefront again, and I definitely know that the internet is part of it, but I also think that the zeitgeist around us is sort of calling him in too, because, you know, you think about things like Ferguson, and you think about, you know, Trayvon Martin, and all these situations, among others, where people are being completely let down in horrible ways by the system, and he comes to the forefront. So when he was fighting as an adult, and when he was fighting against the colonialists who were taking away their land and using, you know, their power to take away land, and then this situation even is more complex than that because the chief of his tribe unilaterally made a decision to have a treaty to give that land. And he got a group of band together to fight against that because the way their traditional ways were was that consensus had to be sought to make any decision like that. And here the chief made the decision unilaterally without the consensus of the tribe. And so there's a rebellious, righteous, rebellious energy about him. And so, you know, in connecting with the spirit and connecting on behalf of clients and so on, he always seems to want to come forward when there's a situation where the system has let someone down. He comes forward less often with someone who's working within the system or using the system's power, and more often when there's a safety net has been removed. And that's what my connection is. And I don't know if that has been your findings as well.
Yes. Well, you know, there's another thing, and I'm going to go back historically into the black spiritual churches. There was a strong custom among the spiritualist churches, which were started in upstate New York in the 1840s and 50s, to utilize spirit guides. And these were and they were also sometimes called spirit teachers, and they were masters. And this sort of ranking of spirits became the custom, and you might say the path, the tradition, the way of working of spiritualist churches. And it was the custom to call upon Native Americans, who were called Indian spirit guides, to bring in the spirits of those deceased to whom a client wished to speak. In other words, you want to talk to your Aunt Josie, and the medium would call upon their Indian spirit guide to go and get Aunt Josie. And these Indian spirit guides were somewhat stereotyped, you might say, that they were considered to be fast or fleet-footed runners. They would literally go into the spirit world and bring back this thing. The teachers would come and give, you know, pronunciamentos, and there were also doctors, there were spirit doctors who would prescribe medications, and there were also masters who would teach philosophy. And so these spiritualist churches, in addition to the spirits of your own deceased and your own friends, your own ancestors, your own family members who had gone before. So the idea of the spirit, Indian spirit guide, was very popular. There were also other types of spirits. There was Crystal, who was a baby spirit, little girl baby spirit. I used to, she had a whole group that came with her of other little baby spirits that were called the Temple Band. But many of these spiritualist churches, there was a John King, the spirit of John King. Nobody knew who he was. He was just John King. And John King appeared at numerous spiritualist gatherings, different places, different times. And these Indian spirit guides, the most popular were White Hawk and White Cloud. And it is sometimes thought that because Leif Anderson was black, she set herself upon a contact with Black Hawk. At the time, there were a number of black musicians, scientists, and so forth, preachers, who took the name Black in front of their name to position themselves commercially and in the market. For instance, there was a preacher, his name was McPherson, who was black, but he called himself the Black Billy Sunday. Billy Sunday was white. There was an opera singer who was African-American, and she called herself the Black Patty. Patty was a opera singer, a white opera singer. And so there were a number of these people who called themselves the black whatever white thing or person they were similar to. And this was a marketing thing in a time when marketing black people was very difficult, of course, and marketing a career as a black person was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that this man actually was named Black Hawk was an advantageous thing in terms of spreading his name and reputation into the black community, because White Hawk and White Cloud had been used in the white spiritual churches. And there was a bit of an apartheid thing going on, especially around 1922, when the White National Spiritualist Association of Churches kicked all of the black spiritualist churches out of their organization. Total Jim Crow, total no more. You can't be part of it. They had been cooperative before. They all of a sudden kicked them all out. And that was when the rise of the Black Hawk churches. And Miss Michael mentions the Black Herman. Herman, with two N's on the end, was his last name. Herman was a famous stage magician, and Benjamin Rucker took the name the Black Herman, and he was a stage magician. He also made and sold Chinese wash, which I always found fun.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of the idea. And Madame Pomita mentions too. Black Patty had her own record label, Black Patty Records. There was also Marcus Garvey had the Black Star Line, which was an imitation of the White Star Line. The rest of the line, these were ships. There was a lot of this going on. So Black Hawk fits into that time period as a business proposition for name recognition, as well as being a real spirit. You understand what I'm saying?
Now, there's a reason that Indian spirits or Native American spirits became so important in black spiritual traditions. And this is something that isn't actually unique to hoodoo, but part of the wider African diasporic tradition. The Amerindian spirit, as they're known, is huge in the APRs, in hoodoo, and a variety of, for example, the spiritualist tradition. The Black spiritualist tradition shouldn't be confused as or synonymous with hoodoo. It's its own thing, though there is crossover and influence between the two of them, Black Hawk being a prime example of that. And the reason why these spirits, the Amerindian spirits, the native spirits, became so important for Black people is because they had a shared experience with the white colonists, right? The ideas of race, the hierarchies of race, were forced upon these groups of people, and it created alliances, shared experiences, and resonances. I'll give you an example. The historian Taya Miles writes a very fascinating article called The Narrative of Nancy. Nancy was a Native American woman in the early 1800s who was of Cherokee descent. She was taken as a slave as a child to Virginia. She was purchased by a guy named Kennedy and then later by a guy named John Fulton. But later on, when she's about 31, she goes and testifies in Tennessee, arguing that she was illegally taken because she's not a Black woman. She's a Native American woman. And to the, you know, the courts that she's testifying for, there's this big controversy on, well, she's a dark-skinned Native American woman. Is she actually Black? Does she have one drop in the idea of the blood purity? And one drop was very much part of the post-Enlightenment ideas about race and the racial hierarchy. Is she actually, does she have one drop of African blood in her, and therefore is she someone that you can enslave? Because if she was a Cherokee, there was a treaty in place, you couldn't enslave her. And so it shows us that, yes, there was this idea of there was Africans and there was Native Americans, but that the lines blurred on the ground and that there were shared experiences between these two people. And so the idea is that both of them lost ancestors. Bloodlines were lost through slavery, through slaughter, through genocide. And so African-American spiritualists, Black spiritualists, turn to their historic allies in order to recover the lost ancestors. So that's why, in addition to the trope of them being swift of foot, there's this idea that if we're going to be in a rebellion, who's our allies? It's the Native Americans, right? They were the people that carry messages between camps. Now, in a spiritualist context, we can, again, call upon our historic allies to restore that broken line, to restore those fallen ancestors, those ancestors that are no longer known. That's really what the Black Hawk bucket is about, right? It's about recovering the people that don't have gravestones.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, let's get into something here, too, about the bucket. And also, I just have to say here that the use of the bucket, Owen Ballard, who long ago was on this radio show and talked about what he used, the fabulous word habituation to the use of the bucket. The use of the bucket or pot or cauldron or gourd is African in its nature.
Very.
And you will see reflections of it in religions like Palo. But which is a Afro-Caribbean religion based on Congo religion. In America, this became the bucket, the farm bucket, and the bucket that Black Hawk's sand or dirt was placed in was, in Owen's word, a habituation to the use of a bucket as a container. The spirit resides in the bucket. Now, a Black Hawk bucket is not the same as a Apollo cauldron or pot. Exactly.
Prenda.
But prenda is another name. There's many different. I mean, people call them different things. Yeah. I've even heard people call them nganga, which is actually the wrong word for them, and so forth. And so, but you all know what I'm talking about. Those are usually shown as sacrifice of blood is made into them. They have obviously the bones of someone dead in them. They have often are chained to chain that spirit in or to hold them down into this world. The Black Hawk bucket comes from the spiritualist church movement, which is a bit more, in fact, a lot more Christianized and a lot more gentle. So the idea that you could put in graveyard dirt, if you had the graveyard of dirt of somebody. I mean, Black Hawk's grave is known, and there are people who, Black Americans, who go to Black Hawk's grave to dig dirt and put it in a bucket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you can use, as was explained to me, general graveyard dirt to call in your own ancestors if you can't. You don't need to put an actual bone in if you can't find one, because so many people are lost on the way. And so this is a very important concept, that it is in a bucket, Black Hawk in a bucket.
And it shows quite beautifully, in my opinion, how these tradition streams merge and intersect into something that is ultimately unique. Because you're right, there is a very clear resonance between the bucket and the African traditions of the Nganga, the Prenda, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't the same thing. It's its own unique object, its own unique item. So it has a spiritual ancestor, if you will, object ancestor or genealogy. But it also has resonance with the idea of medicine bundles. Some of the Black Hawk buckets that I have seen have urban medicine bundles placed inside of them as well. So it's a combination of the idea of sprinkling it with holy water. Right,
mm-hmm.
So it becomes its own American combination of African spirituality, Amerindian spirituality, along with the Black spiritualist church ideas behind it. It becomes its own thing.
Yeah, there's another thing too, which if you look at Jason Berry's book, you'll find that the placing of American flags, like American flags, also references to cowboys and Indians. These things are part of it, and usually a Black Hawk bucket will have other things stuck in it, as well as the statue with the head or the statue of the Indian. Now, Black Hawk is in the praise songs of Black Hawk in the Black spiritual churches. It says he's a watcher on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Hawk is used for protection. In other words, his dirt from a Black Hawk bucket can be sprinkled around your house for protection.
Mm-hmm.
You can then top it up with more dirt and you know, invoke into it. The Indian coins, like the Indian head penny or cent, are also identified with Black Hawk, and they are used for protection against the law. Again, as Madam Pamita said, the idea that the system will be trying to grind you down, Black Hawk will protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And the same man taught me the use of those Indian head scents as taught me about that Black Hawk bucket, although he did not use the word Black Hawk. I've nowadays recommend the Sacagawea coin, which has an Indian lady, for the same purpose. It costs less than an Indian head scent because it's new. It only costs $1. Indian head scents cost more. So that is an old way of working, is to use Black Hawk for protection against the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there's our music coming up. I'd love to do some more on this. And we haven't even gotten into some of the spells you can do with Black Hawk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But so folks, check it out. And we're going to turn this over to some announcements.
The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with your hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man Ali. And this week's special guest, Madam Pamita, will be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners, answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our calling clients are selected from among those who have filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or via telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. If you filled out a client questionnaire on the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know you're available to be on the air. We'll be selecting our callers by their area codes, and if your area code is announced, I would like you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Papa Newt, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to the host. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our first caller, and we're actually taking a call straight from the queue. This is area code 207. This is Raquel, and she also is the alchemy artist hour on in the chat room as well. Raquel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you, and welcome to the show. And real quick, have you gone to any other readers or root workers about your situation we're going to be discussing?
No, but I've done a bunch of readings for myself. However, I don't have necessary objectivity to really feel confident in the results that I've received.
Let's see what our panel can find out for you. And she writes, I'm being bullied at work periodically, and this is something that just keeps happening. There are so few jobs that I'm afraid to leave and hunt for another. It took me literally hundreds of applications to get this one. Turn it back over to you, Ms. Kat.
Okay. As often happens, the subject matter that we opened this show with is actually applicable to your situation. isn't that lovely the way that works? So I'm going to do a quick card reading, and we'll see what is said. But you've more or less defined it. As you said, you read for yourself but lack objectivity. I'm just going to say a little quiet word on that, too. Good for you for admitting it. I have given up reading for myself. I always, have my own opinion of what's going on in my own world in such a way that I cannot really read the cards for myself. Now, what sign of the zodiac are you?
I'm a Capricorn.
A Capricorn. So you're the kind of worker that any place of business would be glad to have.
I would think so, but it doesn't seem to work out that way.
All right. Well, Capricorns are fantastic. All right. Well, I'm going to cut three cards and see what I got. Oh, boy. Okay. Ugh. All right. First card is the Seven of Wands. This is a person on a hill with six people attacking from below. This is a typical card, not the only card, but a very typical card for jealousy and attacks from those beneath you, either in age or in talent or skill set. How old are you, sweetheart?
I'm 59.
5'9"?
Yes.
5'9", yeah. Well, then they're going to be under you in age and probably in skill set, too. Whenever I see this card, it almost always represents competition from those with less experience and younger in age. And, of course, there is a little bit of a blame the victim here, which is the guy who's being attacked really was not prepared for it. And nobody thinks, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, I mean, you think, I'm doing really well, and they should love me, and I'm doing it right. But there's other things going on. We say he's unprepared because he has on one shoe and one boot. And he has a worried look on his face. He really didn't think these people were going to come at him. So you didn't set your protection in place at the very beginning, and now you are being bullied, and it's not cool. We can remedy that, but that's how we got there. Second card is a card called the Five of Cups. That's a card, that's why I went, uh-oh. A Five of Cups is a card of a person who broods a little bit about the past, looks down at the spilled cups, does not have the intense energy ready to, that cup spilled, refill it, let's go on. There's a bit of looking backward and a little bit of weepy sadness. We're going to have to get you out of that. Maybe some Crucible of Courage would help. But things have been done. This is a card of a curse or an actual attack that it could be on a mundane level or a spiritual level. It shows that this is not all in your head. It really did happen. And there have been losses. First the attack from those below, then the losses. But you're kind of stuck in that lost moment. And the third card is a very good card, especially since you are a person who has quite a bit of magical knowledge. And I know this because I've seen your name in the chat room in the show for months and months. And I don't know you well, but I know your style. The card is the Magician, and says to me that you do have all of the tools and techniques that you need to bring this thing into your wills, to have it be in conformity with your will. The Magician pulls from above the roses of passion and love and interest and points to below to make a safe working place. what this indicates is that you shouldn't just make a safe working place for yourself, but for others. There are lilies which represent the innocent, and there are roses. You can actually be a guide and a leader to others at that place of business. How many people work there?
Ooh, boy, that's a good question. Right now we're kind of understaffed. I would guesstimate about 40.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so it's quite large. Okay, so this says that the work you do should not just be done to protect yourself, but to be to protect the other innocent people. Okay? In other words, you're going to go from being under attack and then feeling kind of squashed by it to being a protector. Now, if you have the Rider-Waite tarot cards and get them out, I'd like you to take a look at these three cards I just mentioned. Seven of Wands, Five of Cups, and the One of Trumps, or the Magician. And you'll notice something interesting. The angle at which the man is holding the wand in the Seven of Wands is the same as the angle at which the Magician is holding his arms. I'm waiting for someone to go, "Oh, wow, Kat, I never noticed that." Can I get a witness? Come on, can I get a witness?
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Isn't that?
Testify.
Yeah. And, right, and the man who posed for the picture, in other words, you know, as we know, Pamela Coleman Smith took photos of a bunch of her friends, dressed them up in costumes. It's the same. It's the same guy. This is her. Mm. What I call dark-haired guy with bed hair. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Dark-haired bed hair guy appears on, like, I don't know, 15 cards, right? 10 cards. It's him. So there's an interesting thing about this. About this, it's really showing the transformation from a defensive posture to a commanding posture. You see the difference? In the middle, there's that moment of weakness. That moment of weakness is something we have to go past. So what are we going to do? We have four elements on the table, and we're going to look for spells that use the four elements. Okay, I've said my part. Let's see if we can get a reading from Madame Pamita.
Well, I am using a different kind of a deck. I'm using a new deck that I've been using lately that I adore. It's called the Vintage Wisdom Oracle Deck, and it's totally right up my alley and up your alley too, Kat. There's all these pictures of these lovely Victorian ladies and children, that these photographs that they've incorporated into this oracle deck. So it's just gorgeous to look at. But it's also a very useful deck, and I find it very useful for solutions, finding solutions to things that we see in reading. So I pulled up three cards for you. And the first card that I pulled up is a card called Faith. And Faith shows a young girl, probably around 10 years old, looking straight into the camera. She's looking with confidence. She's looking with calm. She feels that she looks empowered. Behind her is a tree and the branches of a tree, and in it is a blackbird singing. So as I look at this card and I'm saying, what is the message for Raquel on this, in this card? I see, first of all, faith, the word faith, is doing your spiritual practice, so doing magical work, working with your deities, working in prayer or intention. That's going to be helpful here. And sometimes that's the obvious thing that we might advise someone to do, but it's not the thing that we do ourselves. We try and solve it on the material level. We don't go to the spiritual level. So the very first card is saying, look at this on the spiritual level. Look to bring in protectors. Look to bring in spirits like Black Hawk, if you are feeling called to work with him or he's calling to you. Look for those spiritual elements. And then when you do it, have faith in your work. When you do your magical work, have faith that your work is going to solve the problem. That's a huge issue in magic. When you do magic, you have to have belief behind it. If you do it and then go, it's not going to work. And, you know, you say you can or you say you can't, either way, you're right, right? So have that faith. Also, that bird behind is a quite a potent image because the bird is singing and the bird is warning you. So you want to do some kind of paying attention, looking for signs and symbols, maybe even looking for crows or blackbirds as those protector warners. You know, they're the alarm system. They're warning you that someone's going to be doing an attack. And so then you want to arm yourself a little bit stronger that day if you know one is coming. So, but having faith is super important in this situation, having faith in your ability to overcome this. You can overcome that. Second card I pulled up is a card called Freedom. And this card is, she's a woman, she has a dove in her hand. She's sitting at a window, she's looking at very lovingly at that dove. So to me, this image conjures the idea that the bully is looking for a response from you. And when you detach from responding, or you respond in a way that is calm, peaceful, but empowered and strong, then you diffuse the bullying. The bullies will back down. You want to radiate that confidence, radiate that strength, but be free of their judgment. If they're judging you, if they're saying things to you, they can't define you unless you choose to let them define you. And I'm not sure if the bullying is coming in terms of things that they're saying to you or words. How is that bullying showing up? Give it as an example.
Anytime something goes wrong, it is automatically my fault somehow. If there is money missing or anything like that, it doesn't matter who actually did it. It doesn't even matter if I was not physically present on that day. Somehow, it's all my fault, according to my boss, my coworkers, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to defend myself, I'm accused of being arrogant, of being overly defensive. It doesn't seem to matter how I present my rebuttal. It's automatically added to the burden of guilt somehow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that middle card I saw where it's all the crying over the spilt milk.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can, you know, because the energy of this freedom card, I'm seeing that you're almost taking on that guilt, even though you know you're not guilty. I don't know if you've ever had this experience.
Mm-hmm.
This happens to me, where I'll drive by a cop. We drive all the time in LA. Of course, you're always in your car, right? And I'll drive by a cop car, and I'll automatically just go, am I doing something wrong? I hope it doesn't pull me over, even. I'm driving the speed limit. I've got my blinkers on. I'm doing everything right, but immediately I feel guilt. There's an energy radiating from that police car of guilt, and I absorb it, and I take it on. And I'm wondering if there's something that you can do magically to deflect taking on the energy that they're putting out there, like maybe even saying an intention or doing magical work that I'm almost saying, like, I am rubber, you are glue, whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you, you know, that thing that we say when you're kids. And to not absorb that guilt or not take on that energy, because it feels like, you know, that Five of Cups card that Kat saw, it's like there's being something taken on there. Even though you're innocent, you're feeling beaten down by this guilt. It's the freedom from that, the standing strong, the standing proud, looking them in the eye and not even saying anything, but looking at the eye like, are you kidding me? You know, which is sending back that energy to them. The last card I got is a fabulous one. The last card is a card called Union. The first thing, of course, I thought of, which barely exists in this country anymore, is like, maybe there's a union in her company and she can go and make a grievance with the union manager, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. So the Union card has a woman who has a beautiful flower on the crown of her head. Really talks about connection to the divine, but it also, to me, talks about connection to others. And what you want to do is find allies. Find your people that are there supporting you physically and emotionally, either in the workplace. If you've got one or two friends in that workplace, you can feel that you're not alone. Cultivate those friendships. If you can't find friends in the workplace, it's all stacked against you, then find your friends outside of the workplace who can be there and be your support. Remember, even, you know, we're going back to Black Hawk again, but Black Hawk didn't fight any of these battles by himself. He had the support of others behind them. And he himself, his spirit, when he comes down to help, is there in support of you. So you need to have this union of more than one person. It's telling you this is not a battle that you could or should be fighting by yourself, whether it's spiritual allies, real-world allies. You need alliances, and you need union, and you need people behind you who are backing you up so that you do not feel like you're being ganged up on, which is what's happening. So cultivate
good. All right.
That.
All right. We're gonna have to move on to Ali because we have to have him give some root work advice here before we run out of time. So Ali, what can you do for her?
Thanks, Kat and Madam Amita. I think those are fantastic readings. There's a few approaches that I'm going to take with this, and I'm taking Kat's suggestion that you want to work with different elements to haunt. So first thing, I want you to do some protective work for yourself, okay? The great way of doing protection when it comes to a situation like this is using slippery elm. It's a way of slipping through the gossip, slipping through the problem. It's both protective as well as gets everyone else to shut up. It allows you to avoid getting the blame stuck on you. So what you want to do is you want to take slippery elm, and it's a fibrous little bundle of it. You want to get a pinch of it. You're going to burn this to ash, light it on fire as you pray Psalm 91. You're going to take that ash, and you're going to mark a cross on your shoe or your feet every day that you go into work. Now, you can do that daily. You can do it once a week if you wear the same shoes. However many times you feel you need to. And if you wake up and you go, you know what, I have a bad feeling today, do it again. That's a way of allowing you to be protected and safe when you're going to work. The next thing I want you to do is to get them to back off. Okay, and that's a good way to do this is a freezer working. The way I perform this type of working is usually with a plastic water bottle. Some people don't like that. They use just paper.
Plastic.
I know. You're not fond of it. But I actually use plastic water bottles quite a bit in my work. In fact, also how I give out baths. This was what my teacher used to do. She used big old plastic jugs of water that you would purchase from the grocery store. You can use a paper towel if you want. You can use any other type of container. But the idea is you're going to write their names down or get their photos. You're going to soak this with water and sprinkle it with a mixture of alum and salt. The reason I like using water bottles or some type of container, you can use another container of yours. Please don't use glass. You can put as much alum and water, and you can mix up the mixture quite a bit. So you make an alum and salt water mixture and stick their names in there. You wrap that with aluminum foil, and you place that into the freezer, freezing their ability to work against you and to harm you. Then get some peace water, sprinkle it around the office to keep things calm and relaxed. Finally, a last bit of protection for yourself, also to help you to become step up as a leader, is make a jack ball made out of Angelica, Queen Elizabeth, and Masterwood. I'm sorry I went through that very fast. You please listen in the archives in case you have any questions or to hear the instructions again. But slippery elm for yourself, jack ball, Angelica, Queen Elizabeth, Masterwood for you, peace water around the office, and freezer working with alum, salt, and water to stop them from interfering and blaming you and bullying you.
Yeah, I'm gonna just make a real quick suggestion about peace water as our music comes up here. Get a bottle of peace water, shake it up, pray over it that everyone will dwell in peace. Take a little tiny atomizer or spritzer bottle, keep it in your purse, go into the bathroom of the place where you work, and spritz that peace water every time you use the bathroom, just into the middle of the room and say, wait, all who use this facility always smell this and feel peace. Okay. All right, thank you. Let's take it away.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go back to the phones and take our next client, and we're going to go to the queues again and take our call from area code 402 from my home state of Nebraska. 402, are you there?
Yes, hello, thank you. And I am calling from Nebraska.
Welcome. And may we have your name?
My name is Leilani Kuleilani. I'm a long way from home in Nebraska, but we've made it our home here.
And can you give us a brief description of your situation in two to three sentences?
My situation is I just wanted to get more clarity on things, and I was just wondering what modalities and methods you guys use in order to, you know, clarify some of your own intuition, because mine kind of gets, like, a little weird. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well, okay, I need to calm down. And I was like, I got a little too, my imagination gets carried away. Right.
Yeah. So what you're asking for is you're not asking for a reading so much as you're asking for what the three panelists here do to have clarity, what modalities we use for clarification of our intuitive visions. This is a fantastic question.
As you know, we
do tend to use different reading tools on the show. In other words, we read with bones, we read with tarot cards and oracle cards and scrying stones. But I don't think that's exactly what the caller is asking for. She's asking for how do we know that we have clarity when we have a vision or an intuitive feeling.
Yes.
So, yeah. So this is great. So let's start with Ali. How do you have confidence in your visions?
That's a fantastic question. There's two things that I recommend. One is stuff that you do before you get the intuition, and then stuff that you do after you get the intuition. The stuff that you do before the intuition is how to keep yourself in the right state of mind, how to increase your intuition, your own natural psychic abilities, as well as bringing clarity in general. And there's a variety of things that I do. A mugwort and wormwood tea is very good for increasing the psychic intuition. This can be used as a wash or something to drink. You can also use psychic vision oil, that is anointing your hands as well as your head with it. Some people prefer third eye stuff and anointing there, but I was taught to just put oil on the head as a sort of blessing. And I use that quite often in improving my intuitions. Also, incense is very, very good. What I would do is I make a mixture out of, I crush up star anise, I crush up mugwort, wormwood, a pinch of dandelion root, celery seeds, and I crush this all up, mix it together. You can also get psychic vision incense if you'd like, and I burn this on charcoal. And then burn this, and it increases the intuition. Now, what do I do once I have the insight? Like, how do I have confidence in what I feel, see, hear, or intuit is accurate? I usually double-check. I'm a big believer in double-checking. I know we live in a kind of generation where it's very, trust yourself, and it'll all go well. Very positivist thinking, but maybe it's the more rigorous, rational side of my mind, that I firmly believe in double-checking any type of intuition or message that I get. So I followed up with some form of divination, pulling cards, scrying with a crystal ball. And a great way of doing that is if you receive some form of intuition, if you receive some form of message, using the incense that I recommended, burning that incense and staring into the smoke will help confirm for you whether what you received was just a flight of fancy, or truly something that you're intuiting with some extrasensory gift that you have. So I believe in double-checking, in doing something, following up the message that you receive to ensure that you're getting the right message, and of course doing the prep work in advance to keep yourself sharp and to keep that clarity in focus. That's what I would recommend.
Wow. Okay, this is a great question. This is opening up all kinds of new thoughts here. Let's see what Madam Pamita. What do you do to ensure that your intuitive visions are accurate, and to make sure that you're not, you know, leading yourself down some strange primrose path?
Well, I think that as you get more experience doing work, you're going to have more confidence. You know, and I think that's just kind of come like with anything. If you're a cook, if you're a chef, the first thing you bake, make or bake out of a recipe, you're not going to be confident, but as you have years of practice, you're going to be more confident. But what I like to teach my students is that, I teach students, tarot, and I teach other, magical systems and divination systems and so on. is I always say to people who come to a reading or they have a little intuition and they want to develop it a little bit more, I suggest to them to start working with a pendulum, because a pendulum doesn't require any study. You don't have to memorize something. You don't have to learn something. You can sit down with a pendulum and get instant gratification and definitely get those intuitive answers, and they're black and white, yes or no. So, you know, without going into all the details of how to work with a pendulum, go find information either online, get a book on working with a pendulum, make a pendulum, or you can make one out of Queen Elizabeth's root is one of the ways you can make one, or you can buy one, purchase one. But work with a pendulum when you have a question. Oh, I feel this. Sit down with your pendulum and ask the question, is this true? And it will say yes or no. And then you'll get your answer. Then you'll know, and you'll be able to check in with yourself. I will say one more thing. What I do if I'm having a doubt about anything I get intuitively, I go get a reading. Mm-hmm. But that's me. You know what I mean? That's like, I want to go get a reading from a reader. I want to get confirmation from another person as to what I'm seeing and see if they pick up on it too. I usually will just sort of leave it open-ended and not get into it unless they start getting into it, and then I'll say, yeah, that's what I was getting to, or I was getting something different.
Well, that's a real interesting way to work. And the pendulum is, I agree, a very simple, practical way to get a yes or no. You can also throw coins, but just don't lead yourself down the primrose path, as I call it, of best 2 out of 3, best 3 out of 4, best 4 out of 5. Don't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I personally have found when I have an intuitive feeling about something, like Madame Pamita, I've been doing this for a number of years, so one of the best aids to clarity is experience in seeing if a vision comes or if something comes and there are other characteristic feelings that accompanying it, including physical sensations, I will kind of make note of what the outcome was. In other words, if there's a high level of fear, those don't usually seem to, quote, come true. They seem to be caused by something else. Maybe an oncoming sickness will cause a feeling of discomfort, and that will lead to a vision of weirdness. Sometimes it might be something happening on one plane, like a storm about to come, and I'm seeing it on another plane, seeing it as a mental effect. So I watch and evaluate my own history, and I'm constantly self-correcting and self-adjusting my own intuitive hits. However, that having been said, I am also with Madame Pamita in the idea of getting a reading from another reader. I am very frank with readers. I don't say give me a general reading and hope they hit. I just say, I have a situation. I'm feeling this way about it. I'd like a second opinion. A doctor goes to another doctor for a second opinion, and I think I should too. And I have gone to readers regularly for readings on my own situations. I try not to read for myself. I think that reading for yourself can be a difficult thing to do. It just doesn't seem to work as well. The other thing I do is very similar to what Ollie mentioned. When I'm going to be doing a reading, I put myself in formal reading space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just try to get things on the fly. I mean, if I wake up with a dream, I'll interpret the dream. I'm not talking about that. But I don't just say, what about this person? What's going on? I actually take a moment to step back from mundane space and sit into formal reading space. I might use a little bit of a scent cue. I might, like psychic vision, I might use a little bit of a fire flame. I was taught to use a white candle, so I'm just a white candle person. A little white candle, light it, stare into it, whatever. I might use a scrying ball. I'm going to use something that will set me apart. I might use my tarot cards. Now, I carry my tarot cards on me everywhere I go. And I have a little Chimes Ginger Chews tin, so I can just flip out 3 cards anytime I want, just cut, cut, cut. But I like to, before I do that, I like to say to myself, this is going to be a divination. It's not going to be you know, just any moment. It's not like ordering a hamburger. It's actually making a divination. So setting aside time and space is good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get a clearer vision, as opposed to clarity of vision, but to get to make sure that I'm getting a vision that is not wish fulfillment, and a vision that is not just loose psychic electrons flying around, I usually phrase a question. I don't just say, what's the psychic weather today? I usually phrase a question, and that helps me focus my answer, because mm-hmm. if you think of everything kind of like all the light and heat radiating from the sun and everything flowing all around us and all these energies from all these people, it's a lot of stuff going on. And who do you know, if you grabbed that energy meant for that person who's got to quickly avoid that head-on collision, or whether you've grabbed the energy from those people who are going to get married after 19 years of love together. There's energy flowing everywhere. So what you want to do is focus on your own request, and that I find is easier to phrase as a question first. So my question will be, what will this, something like, what will this day be like, or should I hire this person, or whatever it's going to be, whatever my question is. I also do another thing, which is sometimes called muscle testing, for yes-no questions, or kinesthesiology. These are little tricks. You can look them up online, where you make a little ring with your little finger and your thumb, and you put your finger through it and see if you can break it or not. I use those things when I have decisions to make. So I have a whole repertoire of those, but my go-to is go get a reading from a reader whom I respect, because those readers will not just be trying to push me in one direction or another, but will actually read for me.
Can I say something real quick about reading, getting going to readers and reading for yourself? As one of the people on the panel who does readings for himself, I should say that I agree with both of you in the case of going to a trusted reader. But it comes down to, and this, it's up to you, caller, what you're comfortable with. For me, for example, I can do daily readings for myself and most decisions. It's when I'm really emotionally invested in certain things that the clarity starts to go out the window, right? And that's when I turn, and one of my trusted readers is Kat, who I do turn to. She does readings for me and others. And this is, so you're going to have to ask yourself, right? You have to know, it comes to knowing yourself. Do you feel comfortable and confident in what you can read about that situation? For example, I'm really good in most cases, but there are certain ones I'm like, I'm too close to this. I need to step back. I know that if I don't like the reading, I may say, let's pull the cards again. The other thing that I recommend is building up, in order to get to that point where you feel confident to at least trust your intuition on certain things, is to build up a regular practice. We think of intuition and reading as very flighty, right brain sort of stuff. But a system is very, very important. There's a reason why tarot card readers often have a spread, right? Some type of mapping that you can do that makes sense for you, that you can follow. If I see a flock of birds flying in this direction, it means this for me. And one of the ways that you can do this is, one, follow traditional paths of clairvoyance, omens, signs, auguries, etc. And two, keep a dream journal, right? Regularly write down your dreams, because you'll start to develop a vocabulary for yourself. So following a system, trusting yourself, and knowing when you need to go to a reader is a good way of building that clarity. That's all I wanted to add.
That's really good, too. And I'm going to add something about tea. You mentioned mugwort and wormwood, which are two teas I cannot personally drink.
Bitter. Yeah, very
but
bitter.
They're very bitter. I'm also allergic to mugwort. But I do want to mention the idea of a ceremonial cup of tea, whether or not you're going to read the tea leaves. But that is just the little motion of preparing the tea, often, and boiling the water, gives a little delay before you actually start a self-reading that is very helpful and can make you more detached from the results that you're going to get. And it takes a moment to make tea, even if you do it in a microwave. There's a stop, a pause, and you're making that tea. Then the tea has to be the right temperature. You're going to take a drink of it. You push the tea to one side. I'm very formal in doing this. And then you're going to read, even for yourself. It's also good to do that when you read for others. Just saying. Madam Pamita, do you have any final thoughts on this?
Well, Ali mentioned using dandelion root incense, which is super great, but I just posted on the board saying roasted dandelion root. Red dandelion root, you drink that too, but the roasted dandelion root is a delicious tea. And you can add a little star anise to that, and you can have this amazing, beautiful tea that opens up the psychic awareness but incorporates that tea ceremony idea that you were talking about, so you can really double up the power of it, you know?
Dandelion root. That's very good. For me, I have my own favorites, and I guess I wouldn't like recommend them to everybody. But you know, I mean, I like Constant Comment tea, and I like green tea with lemon. Lipton's green tea with lemon. I have my little favorites. I like chocolate pu'er, and I have Papa Newt to thank for that. My God! But I like regular. But pu'er is probably my favorite tea, but something that feels right to you, that feels ceremonial to you, is as good as anything that has a psychic vision built into it. But if you like the taste of some of those psychic seeds and spices, that's good. It's the preparation as well as the actual herbal allies that are happening here, because you're pulling out for a moment out of the mundane workaday world, having a place to do readings for yourself. I'm known for pulling out my tarot card deck and just doing, you know, impromptu readings standing in the path. But when it's for myself, I do want to take a moment and sit in a space, just a place where I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. You know, there are people who, you know, they can muscle test themselves while sitting on the john. I don't, you know, I mean, I'm sure they can. but I'm not one of those.
This is a very, very important point that you're making here, because, for example, we were talking about geomancy in the chat room. Geomancy is something you can do as you're out and about. But one of the key, what you're really getting at here is, in order for you to really trust your intuition, one of the first lessons is just relax, right? You've got to be able to kind of step away from the hustle and bustle and stress of mundane life. Right, putting yourself in that formalized space that Kat mentioned is very, very important, not just in the way of saying, okay, now I'm doing reading, but it also allows your mind to calm down for a moment, right? Because one of the problems with intuition is that you get the intuition and then you obsess over what it would mean, if it's right, if it's wrong, if you're accurate, if there's clarity, if there's not, and you lose the message along the way. So the very, it's a very basic thing, but just deep breath, relax, and allow your mind to go where it needs to go.
Also, what Ali said earlier, writing things down. It's all too easy. I see this happen with my own clients, so I know it could happen with me. You tell a client, yes, moving to Miami will be good for you, and you probably will move in the next 3 months. They call you back and they say, I didn't move to Miami because, you know, you told me that if I couldn't move in 3 months, I shouldn't move. And they absolutely took what you said wrong. So write it down for yourself, too. All right. All right. Well, this has been a bet. Thank you very much for that question. It was an unusual question. We didn't do any readings, but we all spoke from our hearts and our experiences.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30; Candela's Corner, starring Candela Cambisa, Mondays 5 to 7; The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6; In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7; On Sacred Ground with Kai Armand, Wednesdays 5 to 7; The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30; and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And now it's time for our freestyle segment with Madam Pamita of patmadampamita.com. Take it away, Madam Pamita.
Well, since we were talking about Black Hawk, and I thought, well, we'll do a Black Hawk spell. I'll teach you a little Black Hawk spell that you can do pretty easily, I would say. You got to gather a few things for it. So what you're going to need, when we talk about working with Black Hawk, a lot of the work, you know, building the bucket altar, so forth, and working with the dirt and so on, tends to be homebound. But, you know, you go out into the world and you may probably even more often need his protection out in the world. So when working with Black Hawk out in the world and doing this, this is the spell that's going to help you to take him out there. You're going to need two Indian head pennies, or like Kat said, you could get Sacagawea dollars, but since you're going to have them put them in your shoe, you probably want the pennies so they won't be making your walk miserable. You want to get some Indian spirit guide oils, and then give yourself some time to work this spell. So the first thing you're going to do is to, if you have not yet been working with Black Hawk, you want to do some work to see if you can work with him. So you want to ask his permission or ask to work with him. And once you ask, either if you're used to working with spirits, you can get an answer usually, you know, pretty quickly if you have that intuition and that spirit connection. But if you haven't been working with spirits and you want to start with him, what you want to do is look for external signs that he is willing to work with you, or is ready to work with you, or that your issue is one that he can help you with. So examples of signs can be, for example, seeing hawks in the sky. If you ask him and then you see a hawk the same day, the next day, or soon thereafter, that's a good sign that he is ready and willing to work with you. Another sign could be seeing something, Native American chief imagery somewhere, and that can also be a sign of him being ready and willing and wanting to help you with your situation. So when he does agree to work with you, then you want to take those two Indian head pennies and you're going to bless them. So as you bless them, you take your Indian spirit guide oil and you put a dot on the Indian side of those pennies, on each of those pennies, and you ask the spirit of Black Hawk to work with you, to protect you, to save you from forces around you that are wanting to cause your destruction, to protect you from enemies, or whatever the situation may be. Set those pennies on your altar space. If you have a Black Hawk altar that you're working with, then you can set them there. If you have a normal altar that you're working with, you can set them there. But set those pennies on the altar and leave them there for 9 days. Within those 9 days, you should get either a spiritual confirmation that he's working, he's ready to work with you, or, again, that visual confirmation, seeing a hawk, seeing an image of a hawk, seeing a Native American imagery, and so forth. Once you've seen that, once the 9 days have passed, those pennies are charged and ready to work for you. Put one penny in each of your shoes. Wear those underneath your feet, and wherever you walk, you will be protected by the spirit of Black Hawk. So that's my spell, working with Black Hawk, taking him with you wherever you go.
Wow. That's just fantastic.
That's fantastic, yes.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Back in the old days, they used to have something called penny loafers. I'm sure someone still makes penny loafers for all the vintage and repro people. Mm-hmm. Penny loafers were shoes that had a band across the top of the insole, right across where the toes started, and there was a little slit, and it was sort of cut away, and you could slip a penny in your penny loafers. It was just considered the thing to do. No one, when I was a child, ever said, why do we put pennies in our penny loafers? Why did we do that? Why were they available? Think about it, hon. You're maybe not old enough. They were available at every shoe store. Every shoe store sold penny loafers. I had penny loafers. Every little girl had penny loafers. And Madame Pamita says they still make penny loafers. Yeah.
They do.
I just saw an ad on Zappos like 2 or 3 days ago. There was an ad on Zappos in my email that said penny loafers. So
right.
They still make it up.
Now, isn't that, think about that. So if you like to wear some other type of shoe, yes, put those pennies, you know, you could prep the insole or duct tape them in or do whatever you're going to do. But if you're the kind of person to whom wearing penny loafers sounds like a good idea, put those in your penny loafers. And I'm going to say I put Indian head pennies in my penny loafers when I was a kid, because Indian head pennies, you could still get them when I was a kid. They were rare, and you could still get them, and they were very, very special. So there you go.
This type of working is a fantastic, because it harkens back to to a type of working where you do put things in your shoe, right? Whether it was salt mm-hmm. and black pepper to keep you from being hot-footed, or putting an amulet around your ankle. This type of working where you protect your feet and therefore you're protected every step you take is really traditional hoodoo. So I'm loving this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. protection work on the feet is, like, I think a must if you're out in the world in any way, you know?
Yeah. Because it really is. It ties into the two. I mean, anthropologically speaking, there's two types of magic. I disagree with this particular model. I think there's a couple more. Mm-hmm. The traditional anthro model is that there's contagion magic and sympathetic magic. So you protect your feet, and the whole class of workings and spells that are done via contagion, right, is removed. It's stopped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you've all got me started thinking about what is the origin and history of the penny loafer. I don't know who started with the penny loafers, but I'm going to find out, and I will report back later. If someone comes up with it, please post it in the in the chat room, a URL that gives the history of the penny loafer.
Yes,
but,
do report back.
Yeah, do report back. Yeah, it's a strange one. It's a penny loafer.
I predict a Lucky Mojo archive page on penny loafers.
There may be a Lucky Mojo archive page on penny loafers in our future.
In our future, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, the idea of Black Hawk being a watcher and a guard, there's an old spell, too, and I put it in Hoodoo Urban Root Magic, that uses four Indian head scents, and you nail them across your threshold to keep away policemen or the law or just, you know, zoning officials or whatever it is, anybody who wants to bug you. And so, again, the idea that Black Hawk watches out for you, Black Hawk is your protector and your watcher, makes all the difference in the world to have Black Hawk on your side. But I like what you said about making sure you ask. Another one thing we did not mention, I'm going to really briefly say it. It is customary among those who work with Native American spirits to not give them alcohol, but to give them tobacco. Mm-hmm. And it has been, many people have reported that giving Black Hawk alcohol is considered to be an offensive or unwanted offering. So just keep that in mind. That's part of the tradition. Tobacco, however...
I was going to say, he himself was anti-alcohol in his autobiography, so...
Yes,
for sure.
That's right. Yeah. So, but tobacco, corn is another offering that he would like, cornmeal, any of the, you know, of the Indian, Native American foods would be useful. All right, guys. Well, let's turn this over to Papa Newt, and he's going to give us our little final announcement. Take it away, Papa Newt.
Thank you, Ms. Kat and Conjurman Ali, and thank you, Madam Pumita of MadamPumita.com in Los Angeles, California, for being our guest this week. We do invite you to join us next week when we will have another special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. Once again, we come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Ms. Kat via the Lucky Mojo forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman Ali at ConjureManAli.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from PapaNewt.com in San Edward, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via the LuckyMojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you'll hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye, Papa Newt. Thanks for helping out today. Professor Ames posted the link to the history of penny loafers in the chat room. It's there.
Right.
If y'all go and find the chat. thank you, Professor Ames. Thanks, Madam Pumita, for being our guest. It's always such a treat to have you here.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Conjurman Ali, as always, my delightful co-host.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Well, about all I can say at this point is it's it's time for me to wash the cinnamon oil off my dress. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, all.